Like everything we do, everything we give, everything we receive is the practice of generosity. Each and every one of you present here at whatever place, in whatever condition, is an act of generosity. Eden being here in all the conditions and all the things she's been going through is a huge act of generosity. But of course, we live in a kind of practical, monetized world where things to be handled, to function, need some aspects, some material foundations, some material grounding. And in this case, is the means to keep on the platform running, people working, the teachers that we also like to support, and each and every one of you. And the principle, like I was saying at the beginning when Martin started this, was to spread the Dharma as much as possible to everyone, independent of any conditions. So we live on dana. We don't have sponsors. We don't have any kinds of meanings coming from any other places but your dana, your generous offerings. So I will post the donation link in the chat, and if you feel called to donate, doesn't matter how much it is, doesn't matter how many times you can do it. It really doesn't matter if you're not in a position to do it, because that's why we're all here, to support each other. But if you can, please make a straight connection from that through your heart to each and every one of us and all of us here, because this is what, for me, Dana practice means. And I think we all embrace that in this wonderful Sangha that we've been creating and growing for the past decade. Okay, we'll have some time for Q&A after the session. I will invite you, if you have questions or comments that you would like to share with Eden, to raise your digital hand at the bottom of the screen. You have a little heart emoji there. You click on that, it's reactions. There's a digital hand, and we can see that and ask you to unmute. If you'd rather have your question typed in the chat box, I will follow that and track that so that Eden can be, can interact with both things. In the meantime, while the session is running, I'll probably disable the chat so that it doesn't get too distracted, especially for the teacher, because I know it can be very distracting seeing things popping up. So I know you all like to make your comments and greet each other. Please do it now, and I will then enable the chat back again when we come to the Q&A. Okay, I think that's it for me. Again, thank you, friends, for being here, and I'll hand it over to Eden. Thank you.
Thank you, George. I am so grateful to be here with all of you. Thank you to Sangha Live. I have a huge fondness for Sangha Live community, and I have a huge fondness for togetherness in general, for the dharmic explorations that we get to do through inquiring together into these different topics. So I want to begin by guiding us in meditation, and then I'll share some Dharma reflections and invite you all to reflect for yourself how what I'm speaking to relates to, touches, impacts you in your life and practice. And then we'll open it up. And I really hope you'll join me in embodied conversation, exploration, questions, and reflections. Okay? So wherever you are, let's all touch beginner's mind, whether we're new to meditation or have been meditating for decades. Beginner's mind. Open, curious, willing to soften the domain of concepts and ideas and drop into embodied curiosity. Please bring awareness to your physical posture and allow the eyes to either rest closed or open in a soft, relaxed gaze. Please feel the weight and shape of the body supported by the surface, the ground below. And allow for a position that feels both relaxed, resting, friends, and wakeful at the same time. And let's here take in together three of the slowest and deepest breaths you've taken today. Allowing your breath to begin to relax you. And giving ourselves to the process of arriving and settling. So, being willing to set aside, to set down, to let go, whatever you were just engaged in, thinking about doing, and bringing the fullness of your attention right here with breath, resting in its natural rhythm. Body softening into the support of gravity. Just giving yourself to the process of settling. Even in the process of arriving to meditation, there is a sacred no. We're saying no, not now, to the mind that might want to ruminate on the details of our posture. Not now, not now. To the mind that might want to focus, continue to focus on where we just were, past or future. The mind of assessing, letting it all go. And allow a soft anchor not hard, but soft attention. To rest with your breath breathing you. If breath is a difficult anchor for anyone here, we can always extend it out to body awareness, support of gravity below, air touching skin, just noticing. With nothing to do or make happen. Nothing to solve or fix or change. Suzuki Roshi, who brought Soto Zen from Japan to the United States, who wrote Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, said that as we meditate, we become aware that what we call I, this sense of a fixed self is really just a swinging door which moves when we inhale, which moves when we exhale. This swinging door of constant, continual exchange. Inviting the outer world in, or what we perceive as the outer world. Releasing our inner world out. Just allow for effort to soften a bit. Simply resting in awareness of this reciprocal exchange, merging our individual experience with the limitlessness of the universe of life. As we inhale, taking in the green world, the oxygen comprised of forest, oceans, rivers, stardust, phytoplankton, the all that makes up planet Earth. Just allow yourself to rest in this exchange of reciprocity. Maybe curious about where physical body ends and the field, the space surrounding you begins. Letting yourself be and recognize the space that welcomes everything that is arising and passing. Allow yourself as you rest to be aware, awake to all that is changing. Thoughts, subtle sensation. Energy. Emotion, vibration. And allow yourself to be equally aware of that which is unchanging, awareness itself. Allow yourself to relax into 360 degrees awareness. Just being radically intimate with what is as it is. In Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki Roshi said, when we become truly ourselves, we just become a swinging door. And we are purely independent of, and at the same time, dependent upon everything. Without air, we cannot breathe. Each one of us is in the midst of myriads of worlds. We are in the center of the world always, moment after moment. So we are completely dependent and independent. If you have this kind of experience, this kind of existence, you have absolute independence. You will not be bothered by anything, equanimity. So when you practice Zazen, your mind should be resting in this dependence and independence. This is the fundamental activity, he said, of the universal being. Without this experience, it's impossible to realize freedom. So just notice how those words land with you. Just take a couple more minutes to sit together. Honoring whatever is arising for you today in the mirror of stillness. Okay. Please allow your breath now to begin to deepen again. And friends, if it would feel good before we bring our sitting meditation to a close, you're welcome to rest a hand on heart or belly or both. Let's just take a minute to offer ourselves loving kindness, affection, appreciation for practice, any reassurance that might be true for you today that you might need to hear from the heart of presence. Just taking a moment, listening within. Please connect with your intention for being here today. And let's receive one more deep breath, sighing out loud as we exhale. Ah. Please very gently allow the eyes to open, first greeting natural light or the horizon, if you will, before returning to the screen. greeting one another. Palms together. Okay. So, this is a big topic, the sacred no, setting conscious boundaries alongside boundlessness. This can be a loaded topic, and we're just touching it today. And so I want to invite always the practice of compassion for ourselves, for one another. I want to invite you to practice titration today. And that means, as I'm offering inquiries for how this topic relates uniquely for each of our direct experience, to notice how resourced you feel today and maybe to pick something in the domain of boundaries that's at a volume 5 instead of a 9 or 10, okay, to titrate. And also an encouragement that we all rest in curiosity and don't know mind rather than seek for conclusions. Okay. Community has been a lifelong inquiry for me, hand in hand with my Dharma practice, really, community as a verb. And I feel that in our world today, with the severe degree of polarization, hatred, and othering, it is perhaps the most important thing for humans to remember to return to the way of community. Dharma practice teaches us this. As Thich Nhat Hanh said, perhaps the next Buddha is Sangha, okay? And I always like to, these days, presence Norman Fisher saying that perhaps, like, the whole of practice comes down to one thing, not causing more harm, okay? Not causing more harm. So some of these reflections today come from my book, Relational Mindfulness, and some from Luminous Darkness, from my own inquiry as practitioner and teacher over many years. I feel this is such an important topic for us to hold space for. Okay. I'm going to move into a story from Gil Fronsdell's book, A Monastery Within. This story is called The Deer and the Tiger. There was once a monk who was known for his relaxed and trusting nature. No matter what was happening, the monk would smile. If circumstances were challenging, he would say, "You know, if we can accept how things are and keep a positive attitude, everything we need will unfold on its own." Once, when the monk was on a month-long retreat in a hermitage deep in the forest, he witnessed a remarkable interaction between a deer and a tiger. The deer, injured, came stumbling into the clearing in front of the hermitage. Sometime later, a tiger wandered into the clearing and saw the wounded deer. The monk held his breath, convinced that the tiger would surely kill and eat the deer. And the deer, too, was clearly worried. But as it could no longer walk, the deer accepted its fate, lying very still in the grass. To the monk's surprise, the tiger spent the next few days standing guard over the deer until the deer was well enough to wander again on its own. The monk was elated at this sight, as it seemed to validate his idea that if we could only accept whatever happens fully enough, the boundless goodness of the universe will take care of us. A few days later, lightning struck a neighboring hermitage only 100 feet away. At first, the roof smoldered and smoked. The monk accepted this. Then the rest of the hut started burning too. The monk accepted this too. Soon, the entire hermitage was gone, and the nun who lived there was slightly injured from attempting to battle the flames. When the abbess came to investigate the fire, she asked the monk why he didn't go and help put out the fire. In reply, the monk told the story of the tiger and the deer and how it had taught him the importance of surrendering and accepting things in the way the deer had done. "You fool," said the abbess. "Certainly, there are times when you should be like the deer. But if you are to be a spiritually mature person, you should also know when to be like the tiger." With that, the abbess sent the monk away. "Don't come back," she said, "until you know how to be a tiger. Only when you accept this part of yourself can you understand what it means, what it really means to accept how things are." Okay? So just pause for a moment, taking that in. There are so many spiritual messages that we may have received through practice, through Buddhism, through other lineages or religions that confuse acceptance with resignation, okay? That can guide us to premature equanimity, not bone deep. I have sat with this. I have stayed present to the discomfort of this. I have turned towards rather than away from the multidimensionality of this experience to really, really let myself find and remember true equanimity, but premature equanimity. Many of us have been fed conditioned ideas and concepts about what the right practitioner looks like. What does it mean to be the right meditator, the right Buddhist, the right teacher? Okay. Maybe believing that a good Buddhist should only and always say yes. So these notions feeding the potentiality for spiritual bypass, which means for using our philosophies or practices to justify turning away rather than turning towards discomfort, leaning in, turning away rather than turning towards. Okay. I know that some of these ways got me into confusion as a young practitioner, led me to both having boundaries crossed and perhaps not being aware of the way to say no when no was what actually expressed and supported the truth of interbeing. Okay. I've seen so much harm caused in sanghas and communities across our world through lack of support and teaching on conscious boundaries. So, this is a really important topic. The story of the deer and the tiger, it brings up the importance of the balance of gentle and fierce compassion. On one hand, the soft, receptive, open palm of receptivity, of deep listening, when we're meeting each other, when we're meeting a conflict, when we're meeting a difficult part of ourselves or wounded part of ourselves, we begin with the soft, open hand of receptivity to really drop into presence and clearer seeing. And we also work with, on the other side, fierce compassion when it is needed. Manjushri sword, which can sever delusion, ignorance, dualistic thinking. Just the fortitude required to cultivate a daily practice and to bring our entire life, nothing left out, into our practice requires fierce compassion. Okay? So Thich Nhat Hanh shared that wisdom is knowing when to employ the gentle compassion of understanding and when to employ the fierce compassion of good boundaries. Good boundaries, okay? And boundaries on behalf of goodwill, boundaries that support life. Another way of talking about this is conscious allowing on one hand and conscious protection, okay? And this is like the yes and the no fitting together, like the yin and yang, the picture the Tao symbol where they're curled into one another, working together to affirm life. But I'm just curious, maybe to see some nods, if you in your practice have gotten confused at times by some of the spiritual messages I named, at times in your life have felt more pressure to say yes than permission to recognize no. Yeah. And so I want to also bring up, the gift in this path is to take our seats wherever we are, to take our seats in reality, to take our seats in presence. And from presence, from seeing life as it is, okay? Not up in story, in the narrative that takes us far, far away from body and being, but right here, right now, to be practicing conscious discernment moment by moment. This isn't an analytical or conceptual discernment. It's like dropping more deeply into our earth bodies and recognizing the constancy of the inner compass in the emergent inquiry, okay? What is best for all in this moment? What is best for all? What is the path of least harm? What is the path of compassion here? And of course, what is best for all? The all includes me, okay? Not separate. So I want to help us explore more about why it's so hard to set good boundaries. So, getting really practical first, I'm going to share some of the domains in which boundaries get crossed. And I'd like you to reflect recently, just recently in life, are any of these domains in which you're currently navigating, inquiring into, questioning what are clear boundaries here, okay? And so there are boundaries often crossed for human beings in terms of physical safety, physicality, and also in terms of physical space. Boundaries related to protection energetically, energetic protection, emotional boundaries, material boundaries. We know well that money and sex are two of the big ones in human consciousness that are continual areas of excessive boundary crossing, violence, harm, damage being caused by lack of clarity in those domains. Other areas we might consider time, okay? Even do you set conscious boundaries that honor and protect your time? Attention, okay? So just to consider for yourself what's current around this. Beyond spiritual messages, we may have personally received the messages based in fear, okay, that if I say no, if I say no, I might lose the approval of others. I might lose the attention, the acceptance. I might lose the love of others. I might piss someone off, like a sense of I have to say yes to be safe. Okay, we hold yes as holier than no. And I think so much this has to do with a long legacy, which we're not going to unpack and unfurl today, of power over rather than power with, shared power, that being something that human consciousness is just beginning to explore and understand more. There's a number of trainings that I guide, the first being the Heart of Listening on behalf of the collective, in which we do a very embodied exploration of what does shared power mean? What does power with mean? How do we pay subtle attention to the power over dominance dynamics, which are pervasive? Okay, and this is compassionate work all of us can be doing in our Dharma path. But on a really simple level, there can be a confusion, maybe passed down also through Judeo-Christianity, that confuses being nice with being kind, right? You should be nice. You should be nice. I mean, I'll speak for myself. I'm a very small, a very petite woman. So you should be nice was a message I received. Nice is worlds apart from being kind. Show of hands if you've navigated that kind of confusion in your own psyche at some point. Okay. Also, let's presence trauma. Trauma. The experience of boundaries being crossed early on in our life or again and again in our life that can feed and perpetuate unhealthy boundaries until we bring what is unconscious and therefore silently governing us to consciousness. Okay? Bringing what is unconscious to consciousness is part of this path of healing. And if we don't have healthy boundaries, there might be two primary forms that takes. So again, look within and just see what might be relevant in what I'm sharing towards your experience. One is we might have developed porous or diffuse boundaries, okay? So diffuse boundaries, like weak, blurry, non-existent limits between people, the experiences of enmeshment or codependency, porous boundaries, the inability to say no, to really say no, really stemming from a fear of rejection. Okay. And then there's rigid boundaries on the other side of the duality, strict, unyielding, inflexible. I see rigid boundaries like acting as emotional, physical, or social walls, okay, that keep others at a distance to prevent vulnerability, but they also prevent intimacy, okay, real connection. So maybe just a short example. Towards the end of the pandemic, when I began leading in-person retreats again, and many of you know, relational mindfulness is part of my embodiment of Dharma, that we do our contemplative work and we also do practices of meditative relationality. Okay. And I noticed more so than I had ever seen, like walls, emotionally, psychically unconscious walls that people had put up during the pandemic that needed to be taken down with great compassion and care. Walls people were not even actually aware of that impacted their openness to connectivity. Does that resonate for any of you? Any of you see that in your communities? So, how do we set conscious boundaries? How do we learn, relearn, support each other in setting conscious boundaries? And the first place I want to touch is that the beauty of meditation practice is that it requires us to first and foremost live the process of setting conscious boundaries with our conditioned mind, with the narrative, the stories, the concepts and ideas in our heads, in order to drop down into deeper embodiment, to let go of knowing from here, so we can access a deeper and emergent knowing. If our attention is out here, okay, with the conditioned mind, we are deeply, and we are projecting authority onto the conditioned mind, whether we know it or not, believing our thoughts are true, are real, letting our thoughts guide us, then we are susceptible to projecting authority onto others, onto the demands, expectations, perceived, projected expectations that might not even be true of others. Okay? So coming back to center is the first sacred no in practice. Again and again and again, just as in meditation, I ask you to really bring care to the process of arriving and settling. Just notice right now, in this moment, are you fully arrived and settled? Sometimes it can take time. One of the definitions, the translations of dukkha, wheel off center. This is a translation for suffering that has always been compelling to me. And the way it was described to me when I was a new meditator is if the wheel of a vehicle is off center, then absolutely everything that vehicle is carrying, is transporting, is affected, is off center too. When I did my first retreat, and I thought, I'm going to, during this meditation retreat, heal this relationship and that relationship and solve this question about work and my studies. What actually happened is the wheels of the vehicle came back to center, and I related completely differently to those aspects of life the vehicle was carrying. I came back to center. If we're not centered, and remember, center is not a fixed place. It's a continual relationship, a continual little adjusting over here, adjusting over there, noticing when we've left presence and just knowing over time, spirit of repetition, how to come home. But if we're not centered, then we might hold the delusion, okay, that safety can only come from separation, from borders and walls. We're seeing through the lens of separate self rather than the whole interconnected. As I described in meditation, the swinging door, the place of being totally dependent and independent in every moment and at the same time. And I also want to presence, friends, that the discernment required for conscious boundary setting requires us to be listening to our subtle bodies, to be listening to our earth bodies, the natural feedback system for all of life, within and out. And that can be terrifying if we have not been compassionately guided to coming home to our bodies, guided in letting go, releasing the thinking mind as center of gravity. This is real. Through interbeing, okay, and on behalf of interbeing, we can express everything. Yes, no, not now, everything in between from a place of respect and love. And this is really important because some of us have only seen modeled, well, no means pushing something or someone away. No means rejection. No means othering. A teaching that I want to emphasize around this, a way of understanding, and how I talk about it with my Sangha is that we can learn to protect what we love rather than defend against what we fear. Protect what we love. In every moment, life force, the hidden mycelial network of relationality, the field of interdependence that we recognize is true, rather than defend against what we fear. But I don't know about you. I've spent some time in my life, okay, with my mind draining energy, going to defending against what I feared instead. And this is how story, drama, polarization, gets fed. It's really popular in human consciousness. And right now we're seeing it to a severe degree. When I'm teaching new people to meditate, I sometimes use the metaphor of, cultivating a practice. It's like at first, a life experience or a teacher or a book, it relights this flame of awareness inside us. This flame of awareness, and we recognize this flame as precious. We recognize this flame as something worth protecting and cultivating and perhaps committing to. And there's a period at first where the flame might be small, and so we need to protect it from the winds of life, of change, of distraction, of old habit patterns. It requires a sacred no again and again and again. No, not that. No, not now. My commitment is to center. My commitment is to presence. My commitment is going to the place of reality here and now, beyond the storylines that feed polarization. Okay. And when we protect in that way, the flame gets really strong. And then I want to suggest, it's not to say, okay, now it's there, I have arrived, but actually continuing to turn towards rather than away, to appropriately, with discernment, knowing our experience of growth edge, to turn towards rather than away all else we have not invited into our hearts. Okay. So there's a quote by Tibetan teacher Tartong Tulku that says, "Energy is our most precious resource, for it is the means through which we transform our creative potential into meaningful action. Energy is our most precious resource." And this is a great way of talking about this personal protection of the flame, of our attention, of our energy, of our life force. Remembering that we're doing so not just for this being, but for all beings, so that we can show up causing least amount of harm, so that we can show up in service to life. In the framework of relational mindfulness, the way I like to say it is so that we can show up recognizing ourselves as healers, participants in collective healing. Okay. So, on the collective level, when we talk about setting boundaries consciously and yet moving beyond polarization, it's a question of how do we really become skillful vessels and conductors of both light and dark, and both yes and no. Practicing being fully present with both so that we can be skillful. And I want to share just a couple examples that inspire me when we look at what we're facing collectively. Barbara Demings, who is an advocate for nonviolence, says, with one hand, again, going to the two hands, we say no. I refuse, this is her example, to pay for your bombs, your guns. I will do everything I can to disrupt this. With the other hand outstretched and with compassion, okay, always outstretched, this hand we say, and at the same time, I will never let go of your dignity as a human being. And I'll be here for you when you're ready to do better. Okay. It's the power to say no to injustice and also to say yes to the love that heals injustice. That's about protecting what we love, our true interconnection. Some of you might know in France, the Lars Arc movement, protesting soldiers at the base, but simultaneously at the same time providing food for the soldiers. So it's not the people, but the institutions, this saying no, but absolute respect for life. Okay? I could say here in this country, no, no, no. I do not support anything that you are doing, ICE representative. And I respect the life force that is you, the individual beings working for that organization. I respect, I see the huge, immeasurable trauma that must have led you to choosing this. There is a both and. There's a both and. Okay. And personally, and also interpersonally, this remembrance that from respect or from love we can say anything, this has been absolutely vital in my life and growth of how does practice guide me in being a better community member? How does practice guide me in living more community as a verb? And so recognizing when I need to kindly but with clarity set a boundary on my behalf, set a boundary where I see the potentiality for a boundary to be crossed that could come from lack of consciousness, that serves all, that serves the community for me to speak up. And that when there's a boundary in my commitment to allyship, okay? Let's say specifically as a white human, allyship for my black and brown siblings, that I can access the, it is my practice to lean into the willingness and oftentimes the risk-taking to speak up where clear boundaries are needed in someone else's behalf. In respect for community, the whole. There's no individual liberation separate from collective liberation. So many teachers are singing this message more and more and more these days, but it is the truth. We all need to lean into that. Yeah. And, I'll go for a few more minutes and then we'll open up. I'm remembering a time when I needed to set a boundary with one of my best friends in the whole entire world. Trust had been broken in a way I couldn't have ever imagined. Something really difficult had happened. And so after listening within, resting in the soft open hand of receptivity and really listening, I knew I needed to say, I love you. I respect you. I love you and I always will. And I need to take a pause from this dynamic. I might need an entire year, is what I sensed. I need to say no to you right now. And the both and of that, okay? So let's take a deep breath together. Again, we're stirring the pot today, but this is a very big topic. The heart of Buddhist practice is renunciation. It's a requirement for us to hear and to honor our sacred no, an intentional letting go of what feeds greed, hate, and delusion, of what stands in the way of a deeper freedom. Buddha modeled the sacred no at 29, letting go of everything about life as it was. And I'll just share that this topic has been really big in my heart. Especially over this past year and some months since Hurricane Helene hit my home, washed away my home, all of my belongings, and nearly took my life, all within about a 1 hour period, but really a split second life-changing experience of washing so much of what I thought was somehow fixed in form. Aren't walls fixed? I guess not. wash away dramatically, and the chance at getting to live through and getting to live when I thought I was being killed. I was pretty certain I was being killed in that experience. It really brought up a deep, generous, and beautiful reflecting on, are there still places? Are there still places where the truth would be a sacred no, where I've been afraid to say this? Are there still places, oh, just in terms of honoring the life force that is Eden, where a sacred no is required? Are there places that I want to stand more courageously and lovingly on behalf of life? This is a continual inquiry because I was given another chance at life. Okay. So where do we establish, non-negotiables, not in a rigid way, but a grounded way? And before I begin to bring this talk to a close, I really want to emphasize again that conscious boundaries begin within ourselves. Practicing to remember our spiritual sovereignty or the choice we have in every moment. So pause and just in your own way, maybe reflect or feel appreciation for how you take care of your container and your interface with community, with the world skillfully. Remember connecting with the swinging door again. Appreciating yourself for the discernment that is perhaps part of your practice, maybe a growing part of your practice. Before we open it up, I like to end with some levity. Okay? And there's a poem by a wonderful poet named Naomi Shihab Nye. Does any of you know her? This is this poem touches the no on a personal level and certainly with some humor. And sometimes, every once in a while, I'll read it at the end of retreat. How many of you know that experience of it's the end of retreat and you've had a transformative and deepening experience? And you know that there's a little bit of just uncertainty about how it's going to be transitioning back home with some of the external pulls and demands or even invitations. And you know you really want to protect that flame. Show of hands. If that's a place you've, sat with before. So here's what she says. This is called The Art of Disappearing. When they say, "Don't I know you?" say no. When they invite you to the party, remember what parties are like before answering. Someone is telling you in a loud voice they once wrote a poem. Greasy sausage balls on a paper plate. Then reply. If they say, "Hey, we should get together," say why. It's not that you don't love them anymore. You're trying to remember something too important to forget. Trees. The monastery bell at twilight. Tell them you have a new project. It will never be finished. When someone recognizes you in a grocery store, nod briefly and become a cabbage. When someone you haven't seen in 10 years appears at the door, don't start singing him all your new songs. You will never catch up. Walk around feeling like a leaf. And I believe this is the most important part. She says, "No, you could tumble any second. Then decide what to do with your time." So let's open it up, friends. I am so curious to know what questions might be here to really help you integrate this, what reflections. My eyes are struggling. Is the name Echo? Maybe you can come on unmute and let me know if I botched your name or honored it.
Namo tassa, beloved Dev. Yes, it's Elka bowing in.
Thank
And
you.
I don't have a, oh, thank you. You're welcome. And I don't have a question for you. I attend Sangha Live just about every week, and I rarely come on mic. I am not usually on cam, but I wanted to show up fully for you. Because I really appreciate you. And I just want to thank you for your talk. This is such an important topic in Buddhist spaces in particular. And just everything you said really was just so affirming and so validating, especially for me as somebody who I am a firm believer in boundaries and limitations. And unfortunately, there are people in the spaces and places I exist who are not firmly. So, like that's my struggle every day. That's my practice, how to deal with folks who don't have that same commitment to boundaries and limitations. But really, truly, life is too short, too precious, too important, and too joy-filled to not set clear boundaries and limitations with folks. So anyway. I just wanted to thank you and honor you for your talk today. Beautiful transmission of the Dharma. Thank you. Okay, bowing out.
You're so welcome, and I want to equally appreciate your transmission of the Dharma. Thank you so much for what you shared and reminding us all about honoring boundaries on behalf of life, honoring boundaries on behalf of community. Real, authentic, sustaining community requires that we pay attention to this with care, that we're willing to fully embrace the wholeness, the spectrum of the yes and the no. All carried with great respect. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So I see another hand, and you're just going to have to tell me your name because that's where my eyes are at right now.
Is that me?
Yes.
Yes. It's Jiva.
Wonderful to meet you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Very relevant topic for me as well. And I had a very difficult situation recently where I felt, I won't give any specifics, but it was a very awkward conversation that I didn't want to be having. And I could also see how by stepping back from that conversation, I could hurt someone's feelings, but I ended up in hotter and deeper water than I wanted to be by a long way and thinking, how did I end up here? I never wanted to end up here. I don't know if the other person did, maybe not, I don't know. And this was in front of my friend, their partner. So I'm not going to give any specifics, but I mean, on reflection, I can see how I could maybe have done better, but then I don't know if it would have gone any better. And to stay true to myself, I felt very uncomfortable, but I kind of couldn't see a way out. But then I ended up, it was even worse. So I know that's not enough specifics for you to work with, but maybe you've been in similar situations where there was not a clear way to say no or to say, can we not talk about this? Which on reflection is what I should have said. Can we not talk about this? Can we talk about something else, please? But I
Thank
didn't feel I could. Does that give you enough?
you. It does. And can I just ask what you're present to in your body and being as you name and share this with us? What are you
Yeah,
present to?
a lot of anxiety and some shame.
Yeah, a lot of anxiety and shame. Thank you for naming that. Really, thank you for naming that. And thank you for bringing that dynamic in. Show of hands if you've ever found yourself in a similar dynamic, even without knowing the content. Yeah, look at all of those hands. Okay. So, a few things without knowing the content that I'd like to offer. In relational mindfulness, in that book, I share nine principles for how to use our interactions, our conversations, our relationships for waking up together, how we bring what we are doing on the cushion into relationship. And so the first is intention, always making sure we're grounded in our heart's intention. The ego has all kinds of side agendas, like being pleasing or not getting rejected, doing what they want to do, or getting attention, getting approval, whatever it is. But to be grounded in our heart's intention and to rest in the pause long enough before conversation begins, like we have to create a container for especially important conversations. You with me? Just like container for our meditation practice. And then the third is really anchoring in deep listening. To meditate is to deep listen moment by moment to life as it unfolds. So when we understand that's the same thing, we can meditate through all of our conversations. Okay, it's a different form, same essence. In the case that you mentioned, the principle that you're really talking about is transparency. There was a sense of maybe wanting to step in and say, hey, wait, I'm not giving my full consent to where this conversation is going. This is not feeling like a yes to me. And something stopped you in that situation from bringing your voice in, correct? So complete forgiveness and compassion for how perhaps complex it felt to be in that situation. Every relationship we have is also a relationship with ourself. We have to be at that swinging door, attending to what's happening within and aware of what's happening out, like in this reciprocal exchange. The swinging door really is the place of conscious for life. For me, I like to be in the practice of bringing my voice in and just saying with kindness, like if I'm resting in kindness, I know I can say anything. I know I can say anything. I know I can say, hey, friends, I really want to have the energy for this conversation. I really do. But I'm getting the feedback from my body. I'm getting the feedback that this just isn't the time. Like maybe I'm not resourced enough right now. Maybe I'm not centered enough right now. Maybe I'm exhausted. This actually happened to me yesterday. I was too tired for a conversation. And I knew I'd just say, not now. That was my sacred. Yes, another time. I'll let you know when. Not now. It's very simple. It's very simple. And there's a relief. Oh, okay. We're actually bringing care to this topic, but maybe you need be more resourced than this moment. It's actually an act of aggression if we are pushing people to use their energy and attention for something they're saying they don't have the energy and attention for then. But
And I
think about
really, yeah, I really didn't. I really didn't have the energy and the attention.
Yeah.
And it did feel, but I didn't, for all the complex reasons, I didn't feel I could say that. So, yeah,
Yeah.
sorry, do carry on. But yeah, that you're nailing it, absolutely.
One thing I just want to point out, because of that, there's now residue. There's now review. There's now ouch. There's now, oh, that didn't feel good. There's residue. We give ourselves to more clean energetically relationships, conversations, and dynamics when we pay attention in this way. Okay? So thank you so much for presencing this. And friends, I'll also share, I
Thank you.
will. Later this week, they'll be up on my website, but there will be two retreats this year that are about the sacred no. I want to hold wider spaces for this, and we'll probably do a little more online too. Okay. I see another hand.
Yes, and
Thank you. Thank
Ian,
you.
if you can you excuse me just to meddle? I'm just wondering, we have a couple of questions in the chat. So maybe before opening up to Darshana, would you please allow me to read one of the questions and I can go to you and then have another question in the chat? Would
Thank
that
you.
be okay?
Great sacred no intervention. Go on.
Okay. So there's a question from Needy Mittal. Thanks for the very inspiring words. Is anger with the state of the world a delusion to be attacked or one that should be held to ensure that our flame of awareness can lead to conscious action, as you said. How does one strike the balance?
Thank you. I'm just going to briefly share. We strike the balance through our own conscious discernment, not through holding on to a fixed belief about anger or any other emotion, through our own discernment. But in this case, I'll share, I do a lot of work with activists. I teach sacred activism. I come from a family of activists. And my experience is when we go to that old conventional model of activism that's like, say no and make that person or that institution wrong and bad and just that kind of no, that discounts the real opportunity, which is first, it's my responsibility to really feel, to really feel, to really be with the complexity of this fire, the complexity of my feelings about the state of the world, about this issue, whatever it is, to allow that grief, to allow that outrage, to allow those feelings to be honored as a practitioner, to be present in honoring of all that arises with respect. It's energy to respect it. And that from that honoring and metabolizing happens when we don't push the anger away, when we don't just judge it and discount it, when we don't go to premature equanimity, but actually honor it. I hold a lot of grief rituals and at times anger rituals too, conscious containers for these energies. Okay. Then we've metabolized this in such a way that we can actually drop into true equanimity and allow conscious response. It's not that we're erasing our anger, but we're metabolizing it and meeting it with a respect. So, conscious response beyond reactivity, friends, can arise beyond reactivity. Joanna Macy is one of my life mentors, and she's very much an advocate for this. The choice is beyond reactivity, but we have to first feel our grief. Okay. George, there was another one.
Yes, but if you don't mind, I would now open up to Darshana. She can be on screen. And then if anyone and you even are okay, if we go over time a little, I can just read the other question from the chat.
Fine with it. And if anyone needs to leave early, maybe you can pick up with the recording. Okay, Darshan.
So Darshana, go on.
Might have answered my question, so maybe I'll just state that for sure, I really appreciated you outlining like approval, acceptance, and how much I know myself am occupied with the other, which can cause a yes, and when it's really a no. And so when I have to, when I want to, or I'm trying to figure out what my yes and my no is, I'm like can sit in rumination around that, like both hands. But my hand kind of goes more towards the other. And as you were just speaking, like what came is that, yeah, there's grief in that. There's grief or maybe fear in the loss of like the separation that I assume may happen if I say a no. And so I'm sort of curious about the portal of metabolizing. And like when you're metabolizing, you know, it's like come back to the basic practices, but maybe you could just speak a little bit more about that place when it feels like the ground is shaky.
Okay, Darshana, there's something I want to say first, and it's this. And thank you so much for the inquiry you shared. It's that in that moment you described, there's like a fear and grief at connection being lost. If I don't respond the right way, connection will be lost. You with me?
Yeah.
But guess what? In that moment, connection has already been lost. It's happening in the moment that we feed the story of self versus other. It's happening right then. And the voice is saying, it's gonna happen if you speak your truth. Does that make sense? And so, anytime, if we really want to protect what we love rather than defend against what we fear, that means protecting life, protecting the field of interconnection. Many of you know how vulnerable it feels to say, I have to say this because this is what's going to this vulnerability, this truth, even though it's uncomfortable. And I can say it feels uncomfortable to say this, but it honors the truth of interconnection. And when we feed that story that you pointed out, Darshana, it actually feeds instead self versus other. Okay? We all are seeking freedom on this path from that domain. And then you're asking in the moment again how to really, be with that metabolizing. A lot of this comes back in my experience to the pause. The pause, my attention's going out there, it's in the story, and then there's all the emotion revving, okay? And when we're practicing the pause often enough through the spirit of repetition, it's not like it has to be 5, 10 minutes, 5, 10 hours, okay? It's actually something we know how to go to that place of my attention's here again, and I'm just allowing without any judgment whatsoever. These feelings to fully be here without the story, even these feelings, these energies, and to move through me. And then we also have other ways through breath, through movement, through more formal practice, through doing so in community, ritual, that we metabolize. But I'm not going to talk about those right now. Okay?
Thank you.
So I could now read the question from Javier. Thank you for your talk. How can we start detaching from sensations that we thought were unnecessary and pleasant, but then turn unsatisfactory and unpleasant? I'd like to hear from you. Thank you.
So, how can we detach from sensations that we were attaching to and they were first pleasant and then they moved to unpleasant? Okay. I'm going to answer this in kind of a general way. So what's arising for me is the recognition, and I offer this in our guided meditation, the invitation to be awake to all that is changing, truly, folks, the ever-changing nature of sensations, of thoughts, of emotion, of energy, vibration. We're taking our seats in the stillness through which we can be truly awake to the ever-changing nature, okay, of all that is arising and passing. And at the same time, to be awake, to allow ourselves to keep expanding, to being awake to that which you're being animated by the same awareness you were the moment you were born, and the same awareness that will be animating you the moment you die, you transition. This awareness is neutral. It's all welcoming. It's actually not the overlay of thought that's judging, like this, don't like that, want this, don't like that, identify with this, not with that. It's limitless and boundless. This is the boundlessness that I'm pointing to in the subtitle. And the more and more we recognize that awareness as home, okay? We're not so interested in actually attaching to any sensations or any thoughts. That's completely boring, folks, to be honest, compared to the experience of resting in awareness itself. So it's just something that we tire out. I will say we get a little bored of, actually. It's maybe interesting at first, and then we drop into this awareness that is not judging anything. And that is an incredibly life-affirming place. It's a place of vibrant aliveness, vibrant aliveness. So, not pleasant versus unpleasant. It was pleasant, now it's gone. But this more subtle, more continual, vibrant aliveness, it holds both stillness and motion in every moment. There's so much more I could say about that, but I want to honor time. Okay. George, is there any other question?
Well, there's one last question. It's kind of general, and maybe you could just point some recommendations. Susan asks if there are any books, websites, or talks that you could recommend for setting boundaries, which is kind of an interesting question.
Thank you. What I'm aware of is one of the reasons I'm giving this talk today is that I'm not too aware in the Buddhist world of this being I think it's a topic that we need a lot more people speaking to. And as I said, there will be more offered through my website, Deborah Eden Toll, including retreats on this. But I really like the work of Kazu Haga, who, by the way, I'm interviewing next weekend on Sunday for something called Revolutionary Dharma that Lama Willa and I do, a different person each month. Kazu Haga wrote Fierce Vulnerability, and he just does amazing work that blends Buddhist practice with Martin Luther Kingian nonviolence and really like some brilliant stuff and just a soulful being. I also know that Jan Chosenbaes, who's based in Oregon, has a training, I think, for teachers and experienced practitioners about like boundary setting in Sangha, boundary setting in Sangha and in teacher-student relationships. Yeah, folks, we got a lot to learn there, apparently. So that's what I can offer now. And you can also check out my books, Relational Mindfulness, Luminous Darkness. There's ways this is touched. Okay. Yeah, we need more on this. We need more on this. Anything else, George?
No. I was just reflecting on what you're saying. Maybe I'd just add your website on the chat so folks can just check it out. But maybe we could, if you have the time for that, just send me a very short, kind of bullet points notes with all those directions. And I can post them with the recording on the Sangha Live website, so it'll be easier for everyone to just go and check it out.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Let's give ourselves to this conversation and deepen this conversation and invite others into it. This is so honoring of the real invitation of community, community as a verb, a way of being. Okay. Again, community, Sangha as the next Buddha. All right. So it was really, really meaningful to be here with you all today. I really felt your presence and your support of this field and one another. I want to encourage you to take really good care of yourselves and each other, your community, in the times we're facing. And please reach out if there are questions or ways that I can offer support. George and Sangha Live,